Hello, and thanks for joining us for this week's Big Boat interview. In this episode, we caught up with Shirish Saraf, the owner of classic yacht Kalisma. Kalisma is a boat with a fascinating and star-studded history, and you can read all about the yacht and the major refit he's done on her in the February issue of Boat International, which is out now or online on our website. Keep listening, however, if you want to hear all about Shirish's journey direct from the man himself. We were lucky enough to catch up with him during a rare stint on land. So I'm joined here today by Shirish Saraf, the owner of the beautiful 50-metre classic yacht Kalisma. If you've not heard of Kalisma before, you'll almost certainly have heard of her former owners, actors Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor. In fact, she's had a stream of glamorous and famous owners, as well as different guests on board, and you can read all about the boat in detail in the February issue of Boat International. But in the meantime, Shirish is here, or he's not here, he's in Dubai, and he's going to tell us a little bit more about it just before jetting off. You're on the boat tomorrow, aren't you?
Well, I'm not on board tomorrow, but on the 21st.
On the 21st.
Because I'm born on the new marina, which has just come out, as you know, the super yacht marina, and we were the first yacht there, which they covered in the press last month.
Okay, so I thought we'd start at the beginning. Just because it's quite an interesting story of how you sort of found the yacht and when you first set on foot. When did you first step on board the Kalisma? And I know you were with your father. What did you think of her the first time you were on the boat?
Well, obviously, I thought she was stunning, and it's a piece of history and it's a piece of art. But I think it was 1995 or 1996. I can't really recall. I was at the White Creek playing a golf tournament, mm-hmm. and my father came to pick me up. He had just come in to visit me in Dubai. In those days, I was living in Bahrain, but used to come to Dubai often to play golf. And the Kalisma was, I think Captain Avnish Dal was a golfer too, and he was the captain of the Kalisma. And subsequently, I think I was invited on for a drink. Because of its history, we went on. But Charlotte, in those days, I was a banker earning about $5,000. I had no dreams. I couldn't even dream that big, that I could possibly own it one day. I've just been blessed that's come to me over this time. And God has been kind, but it was not at all ever anticipated.
Yeah.
But it was obviously very, very beautiful. And it's quite coincidental that actually... Richard Burton bought it for Elizabeth Taylor, I think when she won the Oscar for Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, which was in October 1967, if I recall, which happens to be the same month and the same year as when I was born.
Ah, so it's fate.
My birthday is the 12th of October 1967. So quite coincidentally.
And I thought, obviously, we could talk about your career all day, and we're here to talk about the boat, but I thought we'd just touch a bit on, you mentioned to me when we spoke before that you kind of were involved in investing in the Dubai waterfront, which I found quite interesting. Can you talk a little bit about kind of, because that was sort of your gateway into yachting, how that project came about?
No. Actually, I have very little to do with any investment in Dubai.
Okay.
I'm essentially an Asian private equity firm. And that's what SAMENA stands for, South Asia, Middle East, North Africa. That's the acronym for where we invest.
Right.
So I'm really not bought companies in Dubai, or nor am I Dubai-centric. We happen to have offices in London, in Hong Kong, in Dubai, and in India. And of course, in the Middle East, we're best known for having bought Rack Ceramics, which is the world's largest ceramic tile sanitaryware company, which was operating between Abu Dhabi, Dubai, and Ras Al Khaimah, but has operations in China, in India, and is a global player. Even Bangladesh is listed on the Bangladesh. So most of its revenues come from basically Europe and and the Middle East. But so there was no Dubai waterfront that I was investing in.
Mm.
The thing that happened was that in the past, how did I get to know yachts? I had two people that once walked into my office in 2003 when I was doing private equity, trying to sell me a Benetti, they were the dealers for Azimuth, Benetti, Gobi, and Atlantis.
Yeah.
And that was Elgandi Electronics. They were represented by two Italians, Alessio and Riccardo Tambolo. And that's why we set up a company called Art Marine, whereby they took out the dealership from Elgandi and it sold something like two yachts. And we backed them at that stage, and it was Abraj, actually, the company that at that time was co-founded with Arif. And that was in the old days. But then I had exited this branch thing story in 2006 and had set up my own company. And after 14 years later, that's gone on to do something. You know, that's really been a mess there. That's been that one. But my company is Samina Capital.
Right.
And I have very little to do with any waterfront in Dubai.
And just talking about, so those Benettis and things, you came into contact with them then. So how did you fall in love with yachting? Can you remember when you know, your first charter and what made you want to be involved with it?
Yes, I think it was really just, first of all, it was weekends in Dubai. I bought a small Azimut 62, and then I had an Atlantis 47 as a day boat. And I really... Here, the culture, as you know, it wasn't really overnight stays. We used to go for fishing trips in those days, and you would be in Ras Al Khaimah or on the coast of Oman, or that sort of thing. But there is not many places around Dubai. The environmental islands in Abu Dhabi are quite nice, but the water, it was more a day boat on weekends that I would use.
Mm-hmm.
Started to enjoy the sea a lot more. Started to look for remote locations, and over time I started chartering a yacht over summers in the Med when I could afford it. And increasingly the charters became longer as I started to maybe become more affluent and started to enjoy the summers in Europe more as I got more time. And that was when I used to charter, I remember, a yacht called Naughty by Nature.
Yes, sir. Best named yacht ever.
Yes, exactly. And it was quite coincidental there too, because all my school reports, they said he's great at the studies, but he's naughty by nature. So there was another one which I thought was a good name. Some of the reports, they would say, he's done really well. He's got all A's. He's captain of four sports, but he could do better. And I said, Daddy, what do you mean I could do better? So I think my next yacht could do better.
So you'd chartered and you've kind of been chartering bigger boats and for a long time. And then how did the idea of actually buying the Kalisma come up?
It came up really thanks to the efforts of Arshim, who's, I think, joining you on the podcast. And Arshim, as you know, is himself a very passionate guy of the seas. It's also a guy that I trust. He's high, very high quality, very high professionalism. And that's not something you get in this part of the world. And I trusted him that he would be able to have the capability. Arshim, by the way, is also a very seasoned sportsman. He's an archer, number one in the highest award that is received for India for having sailed and won many championships on sailing.
Right.
So him and his father have a long history, and they've managed in the past Vijay Mallya's yachts also,
mm-hmm.
who was the early owner of the Kalisma. And they also had done the earlier refit of the Kalisma in 2006 and 2007. And now this recent 2020 refit, I therefore felt they had had the expertise, they knew the boat well, they were extremely passionate about it. And most importantly, in any part of the world when you're actually getting into owning a yacht, it is the crew and the team that you feel with how good they are, how good. And I'm really blessed with probably the best crew in the business. And I've sent you some recent feedback, Charlotte, from many of the guests, and you will often see that this crew is just like magnificent under Captain Sandy and overseen by Arshim. And I'm really blessed to have them. They're really like family now, and really taking the boat to another level.
Yeah.
In terms of the management, the operational, even in terms of the operational costs and the ability to run it in a very hard time, especially we had Corona. We did the refit in Colombo. The boat was quarantined for 15 months. I know there was a very sad thing, Captain Sandy. My captain, he lost his father at that time and couldn't even go for the funeral, couldn't raise the only son. They've gone through a very tough period. So having gone through many trials and tribulations together, I think it's a much more bonded thing. And I think today I get a very good sense of satisfaction. That's a piece of history, 1906, that had this entire legacy and was really in shambles and was really going to be taken off the water, is today just sailing and we all get to enjoy it. Probably the time most when you really want to be in the seas. Rather than a mask and sitting in the Maldives on a sandbag, it's quite nice.
So let's talk a bit about, for people listening, Arshim sort of was in charge of a refit yard. He'd previously done the refit on the yacht some years before, and then it came up for auction and he kind of came to you and told you about it. And the auction, there wasn't that much interest in it, was there?
I don't think there was. I wasn't really following it.
Yeah.
I can't see many people that if they read an advertisement for a 1906 port lying in Sri Lanka, really getting very excited and fully, like barely. I think on Captain Seni had sailed it on one engine from the Seychelles. Yeah. And so that in itself, it was really requiring a lot of work.
Yeah.
So we really bare-boated the Kalisma. The keel is the original, but and Ashim will tell you more about the technicalities. But of course, going through that exercise for it's like a bit of an analogy. I know maybe I'm exaggerating it a bit, but I don't know. But I mean, if you look at it, it's a piece of art.
Yeah.
It's an old piece of art. And then if you were to say shred the Mona Lisa and put it back together, that's difficult enough. But if you had the Mona Lisa to have to sail from Maldives to Miami, it's safety standards with your family on board and anyone else. And we've just got Vina classification too, which is huge
for, yeah,
for a 114-year-old boat to be of that class in the sector. And it was voted amongst the top 100 mega yachts and super yachts in that last edition of Ideation, which I sent to you. I can't remember the magazine, but whatever it was.
And can you describe, so you can read more in the magazine about the arena classification and the kind of structural works that were done to the boat, but can you describe just how you've changed the look of her? Because you changed the interiors a little, didn't you?
Yes. I've been very blessed to have also with me Alessandro. Alessandro Tanzi was a friend of mine that actually I met through some other friends in Umbria, Rita and Villas category. And he has Palazzo Morelli. And I find that the Italians are the best with combining the old with the new.
Mm-hmm.
And Alexander is an artist. He's himself very technically good, detail driven. And I felt very comfortable in his hands too. He really is a genius. So today the look is just opened up the Kalisma. My bedroom, for example, is today. It's no longer that very dark look, which stood for its time.
Mm.
When you're living on it, you want to have this feeling of openness.
Yeah.
It's got the elegance of the old combined with the comforts of the new. And that mix is really something that I would credit most to Alessandro.
And I found it amazing, you know, you did say you got all this done in through the pandemic, which is incredible when you think about how much work you've done to the boat and the challenges you were facing at the time. And again, you can read more about that in the piece, but something that I found amazing was you were kind of doing Zoom calls at 3 a.m, weren't you, from the UK?
Yes, not Zoom in those days, just calls.
What's that?
Zoom came after Corona. And
yeah.
At that time, this was when we started the refit, was pre-Corona, which was really 2000, I can't remember, Kasha knows the date, 2018, I'm not sure. And then 2019, maybe, I'm not sure. And then Corona was a year later. So a year later was when the lockdowns happened. But that one year when we were actually full on, was very hectic. And I've been on 4 Zoom calls in my life. One I just did today with my investors.
Thank you. We're very honored. This is another one.
Yes, this is great. I'm loving it. And I'm myself not very technologically advanced or driven, but I was from 2 a.m, often actually not being realistic enough in deadlines, thinking that why is it not done this, or why Captain Sandy can't I have people over in December? And we would be trying to work towards deadline. When I went there and I actually saw it, and I saw the complexity of what's involved, then I realized that maybe I was pushing too hard. But
yeah.
Having that, said that, it was not an easy task also to do it in Colombo, where everything seems to be imported, and there is very little local manpower or skills for this. So we had teams working from Spain, from Portugal, from PTW Shipyard, which was Amnish Dahl that time was the CEO of that, and various others, and Alessandro was from Italy and Dubai and all of that. So it was really a lot of different teams and groupings, and all credit really to Ashim and Captain Sani for having done that. I was, of course, I don't know much about the technicalities of boats. I love using them. So if you ask me technicalities, I really would be lost. So I can't take any credit whatsoever for the fact that the Kalisma today is probably the most fuel efficient yacht in the industry. Most yachts of 50 meters at 11 knots would be what, when I used to have my earlier yacht, maybe Naughty by Nature or something, was $300 per $5 an hour fuel. Between 275 and 350 would be an average. The Kilisma at 11 knots, we are between $95 and $100, which is really amazing.
Yeah.
So even technically, then you've got all high-end, you've got 4-2 jet skis, 2 tenders on board, 2 ribs, and you've got 5 very comfortable bedrooms. All the bathrooms are newly fitted out because there's our own black ceramics, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
The bathrooms have to be high quality. And then we have all, the look has changed. It's still the elegance. When you walk in, and my original tag for the Kilisma was, I called her the Orient Express of the Seas. And she is really the Orient Express of the Seas. If you think about it, Charlotte, if you've got 7 billion people in the world today and only one person is alive at the end of it, still swimming, then what would be the value for that person? It's really a piece of art on water.
And so, how do you feel when you're on board? Because you were sort of incredibly evocative when we spoke before about the kind of the soul of the boat. But what does she feel like when you're on board?
You know, I do really believe that these things are not just a coincidence. When a boat just keeps reviving and remains alive, she's been through 2 world wars, come out of it, then been through Richard Burr, that entire Hollywood era, then the Vijay Mallya era, then even being with the Savoy, used it as the headquarters for the America's Cup, and Prince Andrew was on board and all the others. And you have had some of the greatest stars. I mean, Brad Pitt made a bid for it once, they said, and Michael Jackson was wanting to take it for Elizabeth Taylor's 70th birthday. And you've got all the glamour of Clint Eastwood having been there with his dog Spotted Time in 1968.
I didn't know that Clint Eastwood had been on board.
Well, if it's in the Kilisma book, the photos of Eastwood with his dog Spotted Time on the Kilisma on the Thames with Burton and Taylor. And he was always one of many, Princess Grace, Reiner, and regular Hollywood celebrities. Don't forget, for Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton, this was their home. And if you see that piece where Burton says, "I have dreams of never living on land again, but living on the Kilisma, which is a library, and just going between from ports and just doing this with Elizabeth," that says it all. They were the 2 highest paid actors of their generation in Hollywood. So obviously, I'm sure every Hollywood celebrity has pretty much come in and gone out with them.
And he gifted her a very famous diamond on board, didn't he?
Yes. I mean, he set a bad precedent because I'm often asked, what have I been gifted? No, she did gift the famous Cartier diamond, which was 68 carats, and I think not once or twice. Twice he got engaged there, but he gifted her the Cartier diamond on the board. And that's, of course, one of the largest diamonds. And I think it was bid for $1.2 million at that time.
Gosh.
And if you see that again, from the archives of the Kilisma, and that book has just come out on the Kilisma, all the timeless romance, which Priya Chopra had done. She's done a lot of work on it. In that, he says that I could not imagine the diamond going to Sophia Loren or Jackie Kennedy or Inouye's, who were the other bidders, or the Sultan of Brunei. So, I mean, you're in good company. And I think he must have loved her a lot to have admired her, these sort of things.
And how do you feel, knowing the kind of the history and the glamour attached to the boat, how does that make you feel as an owner? Do you feel any kind of pressure that you also have to live this kind of glamorous lifestyle, or does it make you more conscious of what you do with the boat in terms of how she looks and the kind of travel that you do?
I know I like yachts, but I've never really had a glamorous lifestyle on yachts. I tend to find very remote locations like Lakshadweep Islands, where there's not even Wi-Fi or a bus, or Corsica, or I go to remote locations in the Maldives or Qatar in Sri Lanka, where we are the first yacht to reach. So for me, I'm not about glamour, I'm about finding great water. And if you look at what we're doing and where we've been taking the boat with us, I think the most undiscovered waters are in this triangle between Lakshadweep, which is the 80 nautical miles from Maldives, the undiscovered Maldives that was called Lakadive once. You need special government of India permission for Indians to go there. It's an Ashimen got me a permission, I think, 4 years back when I had gone. And that was not on the Kilisma, it was on another yacht.
Mm.
And that was the first yacht from 1960 or something to have gone there. So this was the undiscovered Maldives. It still exists, 12 islands that are stunning, with Maldives like water, 80 nautical miles. No one really knows it. Then, of course, the Maldives, people do know it, but they've often lived on resorts. This time we've done 6 months in the Maldives and just been swimming with whale sharks, hanging out in places that I really never thought existed. Really discovering the Maldives, the nature of the Maldives in entirety. Not, and so different to being in a resort. And so amazing. And then, of course, Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka, to me, is just a great revelation on the water.
Mm.
And this whole triangle between Lakshadweep, Maldives, and Sri Lanka is just maybe 400, 500 nautical miles within each other. And I really do believe that they offer the best yachting experience of magic. Sri Lanka is also the land of Buddha. You've got the Temple of Tooth and Candy. You've got blue whale watching. You've got some of the finest golf courses in the world. And so now on the 21st, when I get there, we've just got a seaplane like we take from the yacht, and we never see land really. And we just play golf in the morning at 6 and land in amazing places in Victoria, in Candy. And Sri Lanka gives you that depth because you get the golf, you get the history, you've got beautiful leopard trails, you've got blue whale watching, you've got the Buddha shrines, you've got the caves. It's just magical. It's probably my most favorite country to go to, and I've been going more and more. I've been done a lot of business, started even businesses there over the last 3-4 years. I've been investing in businesses. Like, as you know, I'm privileged to partner in soft launching. I own 28-30% as Samina, the funds engine, mm-hmm. with a very high quality gentleman in Sri Lanka called Ashok Patirajan, who has also now become the chairman of Sri Lankan Airlines and is a highly quality individual. So we've been, I've got friends there, I've got businesses now there. And all as a result started really first from just going there on board.
Yeah.
And loving the country. And over that time, then I started developing businesses. And that's typically how it's been. It's only been with friends and family. I can't really think of many glamorous people that have been coming on board. Of course, over time, we've also had some amazing people charter the yacht.
Yeah.
And, you know the kind of people from Italy, the top of the Anelis and all of that. And they are, of course, people that are enjoying the yacht. And I find that this is a yacht which is so classic, where it's very narrow keel, that really appeals more for the understated European old money.
Yeah.
It's not a yacht that typically goes where people just sort of go for. This is people who really love there's a particular breed that just wants the Callisto.
Yeah.
That will tell you, oh, what will I do with a 115-year-old boat? And they're often found in those, the typical Dubai marina crowd will not be able to listen.
Yeah, completely understand what you're saying.
It's not a boat. It's not a boat to host your F1 parties with that.
Yeah.
It's not that. It does have the space for that.
Yeah.
It's magical to have a party there, but it's a beautiful one if you want to sail into remote locations, colonial waters. It has a bit of history. And that charm, that old world charm, is what the Callisto best lends itself to.
Absolutely.
And these things, as you know, yachts can look beautiful. But if you're in remote locations, you better have a great crew. You're not sitting on a marina where you can actually get off and suddenly do. So literally, that crew is the best. And they're so warm and hospitable. And whether it's Captain Sani or the entire engineering team is great. And my entire staff, led by Tia and all of them in the well, hostesses and everything else is that the deck had all spectacular. And that's credit to Ashim and Captain Sandy, really.
Yeah. And that's kind of essential if you're going to have a charter yacht, that you have this incredible, incredible slick crew and captain and everything like that. But I wanted to ask you, because since we've spoken, you're almost always on the boat. So how much do you intend to charter her? What's the balance if you can say next year I'm going to be on board 80% of the year, 50%?
No, the way I do it is this. It's like now I'm from November. I think this was probably the worst 2 months in the sea in terms of storm conditions that have happened over the last 100 years. As you know, November, December typically doesn't rain in Maldives or Sri Lanka or in Goa and places. But this was November, December, January till now has been very unusual conditions. However, still, it has already had 6 weeks of charter. So I'm really blessed that the kind of interest that's in the Callisto is huge. And people are just asking, literally now, I just had to put my foot down and say, no, I need my 3 weeks now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be on board from the 20th till the 10th before I go skiing to Madeira or something, and then I'm in Europe.
Yeah.
But weeks, and before that I was 2 weeks, but pretty much now it's starting to, it's more than covering its costs on charter.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, which is a great outcome 1 year or 2 years into the boat, just having been restored and just being known. Don't forget when Burton and Taylor and Vijay Mallya and any of these guys used to own the boat, they never chartered her.
Yeah.
So it was not a boat known for the charter market. It's this is all, I mean, your engagement here is going a long way towards actually bringing out the history and promoting the talisman. I'm thankful for that to you guys, to you and Stuart and all of that. Because actually the boat has this great grand history. It is a beautiful thing, but she was not known.
Yeah.
She was known at that time in the 70s when Burton and Taylor would be on the press every day and then they'd be on the talisman. So it became like the same person that manages Christina the Onassis boat, mm-hmm. which is Christina O, Tim Morley, also manages the talisman.
Yeah.
So he has a certain clientele who'd really go for these classics.
I mean, it's so crazy to think when you look at, she is such a beautiful boat and the history is such and the pictures, it's so crazy to think there are almost these kind of lost years when she just kind of was off the radar a bit, which is just nuts, especially now when you see everything that she is now. So I guess I'll end with a final question because I know you're busy. What's your kind of favourite part of the boat and your favourite thing to do? If I said, right, you're going on board tomorrow, which bit of the boat are you going to and what are you going to do?
I tell you what my favourite part is. My favourite part is the owner's cabin now, which I've redone fully, where it's all just glass, so you see the sea fully when even I'm reading a book and I'm sailing. And there is a bit on the top from the owner's cabin that comes to the top deck area, which is just magical. I'm watching the sunsets there or having my breakfast there. And it's also got the old, you know, that time the paparazzi would be hounding them.
Yeah.
So they have, the owner's cabin has its own different stairways to come from a separate side. Like, like you just disappear, you can invite 30 people and go up there, no one would know. So that's my favorite part of the boat. You love having your friends and everyone, but sometimes you do need your space too. So with that, it's I think the top, that side is the best. But then the down is where all my friends prefer it. Because when you're sitting in the drawing room or you're sitting in the down of area, the outside deck area, or even sailing the talisman, there is a bit in the front where you can be lying down while the talisman is sailing. Actually, any people can be lying down on those hammocks while the talisman is sailing, which is just magical.
Yeah.
So there is, I think, each one to their own. Each one has their own preferences, as with most things. It's like a house, which is your favorite part of your house. May not necessarily be from the other person. But for me, as this is definitely in the top, the owner's cabin and the top area, which we fully redone. That top area used to be a jacuzzi before.
Yes.
Before Jim Arlia's time. Mm. And that is where we made it very loungy, very comfortable, and very, just not only just sunbeds, very loungy divans up there to be lying down and relaxing. That's more my scene.
Yeah.
And because I get a lot of massages too, so that's also lovely outside on that, and I find that that's the best place.
Amazing. Well, lounging around on a classic yacht in the Maldives doesn't sound too bad to me. I will.
Well, now I'm going to be in Sri Lanka.
Oh yes, of course.
Magical. I really urge you to go come there one day and just come on board the talisman. It would be my pleasure to host.
Thank you very much. I would love to.
Thank you so much.
Hope to catch up with you more about Sri Lanka. Thank you, Shirish. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Bye bye.
Thanks for listening to the Big Boat Interview, which is part of the Boat Briefing podcast. The programme is mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Tune in on Fridays to hear all the news from the world of superyachting, plus our special data reports. And don't forget to like and subscribe to make sure you never miss an episode. See you next time.